kind of the point where you gotta take that risk. And if you live too cautiously and you never take that risk, you're gonna have one or two crews forever. And so at some point you gotta take that leap of faith and you gotta say, I'm gonna pay this guy and it's gonna hurt for a little bit, but here's what I'm gonna do. And I think, at least in our case, every single time we did that, it worked out. And in the case I was
Welcome back. This is the Lawn Care Leaders Podcast. I am your show host, Britt. Thanks for stopping by. Got a great episode on time management and leadership. Listen close, take notes. Corey Ballard, been doing this a long time. Lifelong learner, lifelong leader. So we talk time management, leadership. Get your notebook out and get ready for some great content. Let's get into it. So last time we kind of had an overview of some of your personal life, your journey, how you started, where the company's at now. Also touched a little bit on the retail side. And then from there, we just bounced around a little bit. So today we want to hone in and focus on, like we said earlier, leadership, how to hire, retain, train, and lead those people throughout your company. And we'll kind of segue to that from time management. So in your life, a company of your size, you're being pulled in 1,000 different directions. I'll just kind of tee this one up for you, let you take it where you want. We're going to try to grapple, you know, the fuzzy gray area of time management. So you take that and then we'll go from there.
Interesting. You know, just we've been doing this a long time. So I think what you find for us anyways, is just things that continue to evolve over 25 years.
And,
so, you know, I think trying to find a balance of work and life, and sometimes, you know, I think I mentioned last time that, you know, people are looking to just go out on their own, but they're not quite sure what that commitment looks like. And I can tell you for us, for the first 10 years at least, we had no outside of life. We were younger. We had, didn't have families at the time. And we just worked. And that's all we did. And we didn't know any different at the time. And there's some value to that. I think there's some value to not, there's no fear. There's no fear of failure. There's no fear of, you know, what am I missing out on? So I do think it's important. I talked to a lot of guys, even at GAE show this year, I talked to some guys and they had said that they got some value out of some of the things that we had posted. And trying to find that life-work balance. But at the end of the day, a lot of these guys also are married, have young kids, and they're trying to figure out, how do I be successful and be successful at home and as a father and a husband and those things. And I think so there's that balance. And, you know, for us, our business has always evolved, and I think – you have to take a deep look at what you're doing, why you're doing it. I talk a lot about what the why is and what you know, why are we doing what we do. And then where do you fit in? And you know, what is your role? Where do you add value? And then of course try to take the ego out of it, which is challenging.
I can see that. So explain to me a little bit. So you guys, obviously in the beginning it's easy. When it's just you, it's super easy. So if guys are out there, it's just them, no significant other, no kids, like just stop complaining and just work. Like we don't even need to address that situation. But what changed for you when you did have kids? Was there things where like you got home at the end of the night and you felt a guilt and you were like, hey, this is just going to be the way it is for a while? Or did you actually, after a few years, adjust your schedule or maybe make a key hire to free up a little time and give you some margin to do some of those things with your family? Excuse me.
To be honest, I was really selfish for so long time in the beginning. I think you have to be at some point. You know, my identity was Purple Point, and my business partner, Matt, I think that was his identity, and him and I just worked and worked. And we were in a fairly small town, and so that was just who everyone just knew. Those are the Purple Point guys. They just freaking work.
Yeah.
We hustled, and no matter what we did outside of work, we we were out. So if you saw us, you know, out having a drink at midnight, you also saw us at work at whatever time. We prided ourselves on that. So yeah. I think, you know, it looks different when you're younger, but we still, as we got married and as we had kids, I think we were still very selfish for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I think there's several things that lead that. Some of it's fear, fear of failure, fear of letting go, and can I get anybody else to do that? And yeah. I think we can talk a little bit about, you know, kind of when you hire your first person or what that looks like. I think we can lead into that at some point. But so I do think it's important to figure out when that time is also, because I think, personally, I think people get out of it. They get away too quick. You know, they yeah. get a little bit of success. They taste a little bit. They get a couple crews, and I'm like, why is that guy golfing 4 days a week?
You got
three guys or two crews, man. Like, you haven't made it yet. And, yeah. and you don't need to be on the golf course. You're, first off, there's a couple things happening. Maybe you've got a well-oiled machine and it runs good. But your guys just get, you know, I don't know. I struggle with that. You know, guys are golfing 3 days a week and their five employees are working, man. Get out there and make impact. And so I think there's people that jump to the next level pretty quick. We probably did the opposite. We worked in it a long time and selfishly worked pretty hard on the business, and we kind of just justified it. And we just said, hey, this is what we do, you know, and for me, that was kind of my identity.
Yeah.
Since I've grown up a little bit, I've matured over that where I didn't need that as my identity. But in the beginning, that was, as long as I had Perfect Cut, as long as I had my business, whatever your business looks like, as long as I had that, everything else was okay, right?
Yeah.
And at times, I focused much harder on that than I did my marriage. And, and I think people struggle with those balances as well. And they have to make their own decisions because it's easy for us, I'll speak for myself, you know, to be like, well, I make the money and that's what I do. And but, you know, that's not necessarily fair either.
Yeah.
So I think those are personal questions people have to ask themselves. And I think, I avoided being completely honest with myself for a long time, and it was just work, work, work. And as long as I had that, everything else.
And does that go back to you for you? So it seems like things in your personal life added up to that point. Does that go back to, hey, I'm going to prove people wrong? You know, back to that teacher who said that comment to you. Does it go back to that, or is it you just literally want to push for success and be the best you can? Or is it a money aspect where you were like, hey, I want to get to this revenue point. I want to be making this much money. Like, was there an end inside? What was the thinking behind it, I guess?
It was all good love. I mean, I think it's everything. I think it's trying to prove people wrong, trying to prove myself right, that self-fulfillment. I just want a little more reassurance. You know, I think it's, you know, it's ego-driven at times.
Yeah.
As a lot of friends went to college, we were kind of at that weird age where we didn't go to college, and it was kind of too late to go back, or not necessarily, but we were all in, we were committed to this business.
Yeah.
So I think at that point, I was fueled by a lot of things, and maybe different than my business partner was. I was just fueled by bigger, more.
Yeah.
I mentioned in the last podcast that, you know, I remember sitting at a retreat or a business retreat for Lawn Landscape Magazine that they used to have, and again, a guy asked me, would you rather do X at half the margin or Y, and I just wanted bigger, and I didn't know what that looked like. We're getting ready to walk through a company timeline, and part of the timeline starts at what was your goal, Corey, at 14 or 18 years old or two.
Yeah.
I didn't have a number in mind. I just said, let's just grow. And so I didn't have it all figured out either. And so I think some guys think they need to have it all figured out.
Yeah.
I don't think they have to have it all figured out. You don't have to say, you know, 2022, we got to do X.
Yeah.
I do think you need to have your core values figured out. What does your business model look like? And and what do you believe in? And what are you willing to do for it? I think comes up to, and we were willing to do anything for it. And not anything like, not bad things. We were willing to work as hard as it took. And then we jumped on great opportunities along the way. So, but being honest, you know, I've had struggles through the years too. I wasn't great at home for a long time.
Yeah.
I was selfish. And then when I did have free time, you know, I thought I deserved to go golfing or whatever that looked like.
Yeah.
I think it's important to find that life work balance.
Yeah.
And that just comes with maturity, and,
And did that happen at a certain point? Like what? Because it sounds like there was a tipping point. You know, it was, hey, this is me. I'm pushing towards success. We're all cutting deep for the chance to win. That's how I am. I think, I mean, I can kind of see similarities here because I'm the guy, you bring up golfing a lot. So my brother and my dad, really good golfers. But I'm the guy, like when they're taking out, you know, a 5-iron or a 3-wood, I just want to hit the driver and like swing for the fences. Like that's my personality. I'm like, hey, I'm only going to golf once this year. I'm going to freaking hit my driver every time. So that's just my personality. And that translates to my business. It's like when I brought my first guy on, I think we had 280 clients. We wanted more. We hit that goal. Now we want more. And now we're sitting, you know, we have a good solid base of clients, but it's not enough. Like we're trying to double this year. So it sounds to me, or it seems like it at least, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you were in the same position, like growth, 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 growth. What was it that kind of switched your mindset? I just want you to dig a little deeper here. Was it, you know, you saw your kids growing up, or you attended a conference and that question switched your heart? What was it that, or maybe it was a key hire. Maybe you brought somebody in that helped you out a little bit and you could trust. Just speak to that a little bit. What was the turning point? Because now you're all about the why and the mission, and I think it's hard for people in the beginning to get there. You know, does that make sense? In the beginning, it's money, 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 top line. How much are we making in profit? Get me to where you're at now.
Yeah, so we certainly made a lot of great hires. You know, and the key to our success was just having great people. And yeah. I think I talked about just hiring great people. People that, yeah. And they don't have to be industry experts, just yeah. great people. Yeah. Great people, you can do a lot of stuff. And, you know, for us, I don't think I mentioned maybe Matt as much last time, but Matt has a totally different personality than me. And that was kind of key. We still get this 25 years later, like, man, you guys are so different. Well, you don't need two of me. We don't need two of him. That's what works.
Yeah.
So I think it's identifying key people, having trust in them. Yeah. I don't micromanage, and it's not, some things I kind of do, and then some things I choose my battles. I pick my battles well. I try to figure out where can I add value.
Yeah.
But I think as the business evolves, you kind of figure out. It kind of ebbs and flows. You kind of have times when you're fully engaged, mm-hmm. And sometimes it does your business. It's a benefit to back away, and sometimes you just need a breather. You need to back away sometimes, and not only let people do what they need to do. But you need to identify problems. And I think we've been really good at that at times and really poor at that at times. And,
okay.
Sometimes you almost, I hate to say let it fail, but not let it fail to shut down, but let it fail to where you say, okay, we identified that we've got some real weaknesses here in this area. And I don't know that there was a specific like turning point where it was like, man, I don't have to be there every day.
Yeah.
Or what it looks like. I do get a lot of people today that say, you know, must be nice. And if I had that, I'd never be there. As you know, and I know, and anybody that's listening that's in our business, we had a CFO that was with us that helped us in the early 2010, 2011 area. I just talked to him last week, and he said, you were in the toughest business. He was in the banking business. He was in a lot of it. He goes, I've never seen a business tougher than yours. When you think about employees, the equipment, the amount of clients, the billing, the collecting, throw in some weather-related issues, vehicles. He just said, it's an insanely intense business to work at 6-10% national average margins. Mm-hmm. I think guys are achieving better than that, but as you start to scale, those get into check. And so it's a it's an incredibly tough business. I don't know that it ever gets completely on autopilot. I think there's certainly a threshold where you get really, really good people. And you know, I think one of the things we were going to dive into a little bit is recruit and retain, but you get really, really good people, and you get them to believe what you believe in, and you give them enough power and enough buy-in that they start to think like you.
Yeah.
And then I think you can pull back a little bit. It doesn't mean pull back to go golfing. It means pull back to work on your business and not in your business all day long.
Yeah, just focus on different stuff. Yeah.
What do we want to? And then we start saying, hey, where do we want to be in 2019? Where do we want to be in 2020? What does that look like?
Yeah.
Who people would I hire to get there?
Yeah.
Are there better vehicles out there? Are there better You know, who's our client? I always like to ask the question too. We talk about this. If we were to start over, who would we hire? Who would we go after?
Yeah.
And then why can't we do that today? Like if our ideal customers are X, Y, and Z,
yeah.
Why are we messing with people?
Yeah.
Get where we just, and you don't have, and people sometimes go, out, it's too late. But it's not though. Like you can keep those, but then start looking at, or you can ask yourself about a key employee. Like if I were to hire, a guy, would I hire him again? If the answer is no, then you kind of got your answer.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, you can focus definitely on the things that are more important. And back to your comment about the guy that said, "Oh, if I got to where you were at, I would never be there." Those type of people don't ever get to the point you're at, anyways, because they don't have the passion. Like it takes a certain level of passion, enjoying the work and the grind and the climb, to get to where you're at. So I always think it's funny when people say that as well.
It's interesting. I kind of can take offense to it a little bit. It's like, I wouldn't even show up. And I'm like, but you would never, you wouldn't show up. Like,
you would.
Then you'll be out of business.
Exactly.
It's exactly that. You would have never got there.
You would have never got there because you don't enjoy it.
There's so many times that we could have taken our foot off the gas pedal. And we did. We've had some plateau years and yeah. kind of regrouped. That's why when you look at, Warren Buffett, he's still working at 80 some years old.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need, we all can agree he doesn't need money, right? Yeah. 83 billion, I think is his number. Could be 86. It might be 87 by the end of the day. I don't know.
Yeah.
But most people that are super successful love the work.
Yeah.
It doesn't become about the money. And
yeah.
Again, I think if you're driven by money first, I don't know a lot of people successful like that. I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah.
Most of the people that I trust and look up to, there's some people are still working. They don't need to work. It's yeah. they love it. They don't need. I shouldn't say they don't need the money. It's that's past.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you were kind of turning this direction a couple minutes ago. So did you? At what point did you work yourself out of a job, and then kind of how did you handle that? You mentioned a little bit you started to focus on other stuff, but in the beginning that kind of had to be weird. And were you intending for that? Like, were you hiring for somebody to take over your role so you could focus on something else? And what was that?
Sure, good question. Those are scary times, and that happened a long time ago, like where I finally decided that I was going to we ran mowing. We had three or four mowing crews, I think an applicator, maybe one irrigation tech. And I said, I'm not going to mow this year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I had an exact direction of why I wasn't going to mow, but I thought maybe, again, I thought I made it,
Yeah.
Four crews, we've made it. I'm going to drive around in a fancy truck.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, get the crews out. We're going to check on quality. And the truth is, I don't know exactly what it looked like. That was 20 some years ago. And then my business partner, Matt, still was on, he was on a mowing crew at the time. And then about a year later, maybe 2 years later, he came to me and said, I'm going to get out of the field. And I remember him, I remember the conversation. I asked him straight up, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And I'm going to grow this company. And I'm like, he goes, I'm going to sell. And I said, I at times was small-minded in those ways. I kept thinking, well, if I'm not in the field and you're not in the field, who's in the field?
Yeah.
and those are very challenging moments for businesses, I think, small and all sizes. It's, as an owner, when do you make that decision to step back?
Yeah.
And then what does that look like? And what are you going to do? Because I think, again, a lot of times I see the struggle where, like, let's say, Britt, you're the best salesman your company has, and you step out. And you're going to do, now you said, I'm going to spend time in the office. I'm going to work on spreadsheets and books.
Yeah.
And you're our best salesman. And so I think owners sometimes pull themselves out of a role that they might be just the best at, where you could have maybe said, well, for X, I can hire a gal part-time, full-time.
Yeah.
And I can do what I'm best at, or maybe I'm best at operations.
Yeah.
Those were scary times, though, kind of in the beginning, figuring out when do I pull out? Mm-hmm. Can I afford to? Like, oh my God, I'm going to take a salary, but I'm not going to generate any money. You are going to generate money, but it is hard to wrap your mind around. And can I produce enough with my other people?
Yeah.
And then can I convince them? Because this still happens today, but it happened a lot in the beginning because I worked side by side with a lot of these guys. And
yeah.
Must be nice. Drive around all day. Ask me, hey, you think that's what I do? I just drive around all day? Like, yeah, it must be nice. I could do that. And it's like, well, there's a little more to it than that. You know, I get here 2 hours before you, stay an hour after you.
Yeah.
Like, we're working on stuff all day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is a weird, and everybody has to make that their own decision. And I get a lot of that, like, hey, I'm at that one crew. When do I go to two? Or I'm at two. When do I go to three?
Yeah.
But I spend all night working on my admin, my books. I'm trying to bill. I'm behind on receivables. I'm behind on payables.
Yeah.
And I try to talk to, and some of these owners say, well, I spend all day in the office now. And I just say, hey, Joe, you're spending all day in the office. You just said that you hate it and you're not very good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you get out in the, you know, where are you best?
Yeah, yeah.
And be brutally honest with yourself and just say, but then they say, well, I don't have anyone else.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, now you really hurt your business in a way. You're the best guy to be out there. You're the people person. You're the sales guy. You're the face of the company. Yeah. Now you're in the office running billing.
Yeah.
So I just think people really need to think about where they're best suited and when to make that jump.
Yep.
I encourage making the jump. I know that we were just talking about Joe Rogan before this, but Rogan was talking about, like, sometimes you put yourself in a situation where you force yourself to game up a little bit. Like,
yeah,
he was talking about buying his first, like, Ferrari, and he goes, I couldn't afford it, but I knew if I bought it, I'd work harder. Now, we don't need to buy any Ferraris in the long-term world, but it's kind of the point where you gotta take that risk, and if you live too cautiously and you never take that risk, you're going to have one or two crews forever. And so at some point, you got to take that leap of faith, and you got to say, I'm going to pay this guy, and it's going to hurt for a little bit, but here's what I'm going to do, and I think, at least in our case, every single time we did that, it worked out. And in the case I was telling you where Matt said, hey, I'm going to concentrate on sales, we had quite a few, you know, we maybe had a dozen crews at that point in different types of crews, 7 or 8 mowing crews and some other crews. But even then, I had a tough time understanding what does your day look like, Matt? Yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to go sell more work. And I'm like, to who? And he goes, everybody.
Yeah.
And he did. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. And within a month, we were looking at each other like, we should have done this last year. But it's fear, you know, it's fear. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. And you really do, like, because that's my fear. This is my first year getting out of the field. You know, for the past 7 years, I've either been mowing, landscaping, spraying. So I definitely get it. Like, I'm literally right where you're talking about. And my fear is after the spring rush, I'm going to be like, okay, I need to go spray something. Like, what am I? I'm just going to get cooped up in here. But I do like, I like your point about the Ferrari and, like, taking that jump, because it forces you out on the edge. And in my mental image, it's just like, you could see a guy running down the street, but then when you force yourself into a situation and he's got a dog chasing him, he's going to run 10 times faster. And I kind of had that mental image, you know, you take that leap and it forces you to do more than you ever thought you could. So that was cool. And then I just jotted down some notes here as you were talking. It sounds like self-awareness is huge. Like, you need to know, as you're growing, as you're scaling, your company's taking that next step, you need to know what you're best at and then hire for that kind of counterpart or somebody to fill in those gaps. So that's awesome. So you did kind of work yourself out of a job, but then you were able to focus on growth and scaling. Was there a time, touch on, before we get in, right after this, don't let me forget, because I will, I want to talk about hiring and training and leading, but was there a time throughout all this that you got burnt out? For how long, for what reason, and how did you handle that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think we always, you kind of have the ebbs and flows where you're really engaged. At least for us, we've been doing this a long time. And I think there's been years where I just haven't been very engaged. And I don't think I realized it at the time. I'd show up, I'd get there. But I just don't think I wasn't as passionate about the business. It was doing pretty well, I thought. And so I do think that that's... some of that's just what's going on in your life. You've got other commitments. I think it's important to stay engaged, but I can tell you over our time, I've had And we've been having some really honest talks lately, just trying to figure out what, even where I'm at today and where my passion's at. I love working on the New Ballard side of our stuff with our products, and I'm passionate about that again. And yeah. I love doing the stuff we're doing today, talking to guys about their business. And so, you know, I think that happens for everybody. I think it's no different if you're a fighter and you're training for fights and then you take a two years off. But I do also think that they're, just like a fighter, there's windows of opportunity in there. And you can't take too, the break can't get too long. I think you can take your foot off the gas occasionally. I do think it's important for people to get recharged and whatever that looks like. It's whether it's vacation, whether it's just stepping away from the business for a while, whether you climb mountains, ride motorcycles, church events, whatever it looks like. I do think that that life balance is important. I think when people, some people just, when they work in their business just so freaking hard, that they just get burnt out. And I think what happens is it doesn't take much to put you over the edge. I can tell you that in 2009 and 10, kind of the recession, I don't think we can call it a depression, but it was tough. We had some big clients that didn't pay us. We lost a lot of money over a 24 month period. We had a lot of big clients that we're doing work for, and they were in that commercial building, and we had some tough meetings, and I'll admit this straight up to anybody. This was, you know, kind of some life changing stuff. And we had bought some companies in the erosion control sector. We were trying to, again, we were doing some big things, and we just didn't think we'd fail. But so we had this great company, great clients, great employees, great branding, and I'm sitting in an office across from a bankruptcy attorney, and just talking about what if. We weren't at bankruptcy yet, but it was what if. Like, what if we can't, you know, we were getting stung for lots and lots of money, over $1 million in some cases. And we didn't have the reserve, the piggy bank to handle that. And some of those things that happen, that adversity that happens, I think, in any business on any level, forces you to re-engage a little bit, because you start to feel, for us, we felt pretty invincible, right? And I remember across the table from this guy, and Matt was there, and we're sitting there talking to this guy, and he's telling me this whole thing, what's going to happen. I'm going to work for the bank, basically. And I'm like, whoa. We didn't get there. We didn't get there. But I can tell you, those are some pivotal things that, again, we looked at each other after that meeting and said, we got to get this fixed. And those are some circumstances out of our control. But I can tell you that a lot of guys I talked to would have played the victim there and just shut her down. I know I'm a little off topic there, but I just think it's important. Think about your goals. Remember why you started. You're gonna have some low points, man. As business owners, we're gonna have tough days. I think it's important, at least now for me today, I don't take that stuff home with me like I used to.
That's a good point.
I just try to go, hey, you know what? And I've actually taken a new philosophy, and some of my people don't like it, but I just did about snow, and I've done it about, like, it's just grass, right? We just cut it. Nobody died. You know, snow removal, just remove it. I mean, we do a lot of snow and ice, but now people can slip and fall on ice. But I try to dumb it down a little bit and say, nobody died, right? We're all okay. Everyone's family's okay. Kids are okay. Let's get back to, like, because it's like it's the end of the world, and if they don't get mowed by Friday, and I'm like, if they don't get mowed by Friday, what? What happened?
How do you do that? Because that's, I struggle with that, and I still struggle with it. Because, you know, you're at work all day. All this is happening to, it feels like just you. You know, it's, there's the company, but then there's Corey, there's Britt, and it feels like it's happening to us, and we have to figure out a solution. And when you get home, nothing changes. You want to tell, you know, your better half everything that's going on, get her opinion. You know, it's kind of nice to have her say it's all going to be okay. How do you disconnect? Like, do you literally, like, give me some practical stuff too. Like, do you leave your phone in your truck? Do you go to the gym before you go home? Like, how do you disconnect when you get home and not put that all on her as well? Because that's not fair. And I do that a lot, because we started it. I feel like she should know, and I want her opinion.
No, I get it. That's a great point. I don't know if you listen to Ed Milet or not, but Ed Milet does some podcasts. It's a great one to listen to. He's doing a new thing where every day when he gets home, he leaves his phone in his car for 1 hour, and it gives him a chance to engage with his kids and his wife for 1 hour. Because guys like us, I don't disconnect.
Yeah.
We're trying to do no TV in our house.
Yeah.
We're better at it because at least it doesn't, it's just more noise, and the kids have a 4 and 6 year old at home and they're running around, the TV's on, and there's chaos. I don't do a great job of it. I find myself addicted a little bit to my phone and the interaction and answering questions. And for some reason, I feel like if somebody asks a question, even this morning, there were some questions that I'm answering while I drive here on ice, 2 degrees out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to answer that guy in 9 seconds. Yeah. I can get back to him when I get to a comfortable place. But I don't disengage very well. My business partner does a much better job than I do. He on the Perfect Cut side, he climbed Mount Everest in 2011. I won't tell his story, but he was away from a cell phone for 3 months, and that changed. He says it changed his life. Mm-hmm. He gets home, he plugs it in on his nightstand in his bedroom, and he says, "I check it maybe before I go to bed." He just said he had to for peace of mind. And I kind of like that. I am not good at that, and I need to work better. I'm getting ready to leave for a vacation on Thursday. Thank God, as long as the plane can get out of this freezing cold weather. And I need to just disconnect for a few days. It's not the end of the world, but I struggle with that.
Shout out to your followers. Tell them to not bother you while you're gone.
Oh no, I'll be posting pics.
Exactly. My life would be changed too. Like if I turned my phone off for 3 months, I would come back to no job. So my life would be changed as well, just in a different way.
Yeah, but you know, I think there's somehow to try to find that balance at home.
Yeah.
I try not to. My wife also worked in our business, and she works at the Ballard side now on the products. We try to have a rule of not talking about business at home.
Yeah.
Although it's hard. We, you know, it's hard to not talk about stuff that's going on, and because that's your other baby, right? It's your business and it's your livelihood. And, but if you're not careful, it'll consume every conversation. Before you know it, you're working it all day and you're thinking about it all night, and then you're dreaming about it all night. And it's just, it becomes this, just this mess of too much. And then that's why some guys on smaller sizes eventually just go, "Hey, you know what? I'm just going to get a job." Like, isn't worth it. There's so much going on. And then, you know, there's a value to peace of mind and, "Hey, I just want to have a job that pays me X." But it's hard to disconnect. And you also hate to bring that home to your wife or whoever and just bombard her with your shitty day. Can you believe this? Can you believe that? And then sometimes I find myself asking for opinions and I don't really want her. So I don't
you just want to get it out and start talking about it.
I just want to bitch about something and complain about something. And then truthfully, she says, "Well, what about this?" And I'm like, "Oh, you don't understand."
Yeah.
So what was I asking for? That's not fair.
Yeah.
I asked for opinion and then I really wasn't interested in the opinion. And that's just, I have to work on that myself. If I ask a, because sometimes they have a better perspective than us because we're so far in it.
Yeah.
Like, we can't see.
Yeah.
Sometimes they get a little bit of different perspective and say, "Hey, you know, maybe this is what you could do." Or, and sometimes, you know what? I think she's right.
Yeah.
Because we do, as business owners, we get in the weeds pretty bad sometimes. We're in all the stuff. And that's why I encourage people to sometimes take a breather, whatever that means. It could be a long weekend. It could be, "Hey, I don't answer my phone from 4 to 6. Or maybe on Sunday, if you're a church guy, "Hey, Sunday is a no phone day from 8 to noon. Whatever it looks like. And then I get people to say, "I just have to." But do you really have to answer your phone from 8 to noon on Sunday? No. You really don't.
No. The problem, like the other thing that I see is, so guys get into a business most of the time to give their families a better life or to get something or get somewhere where they're not now. And so I feel like in the, at least the first 5 years, you're going at this frantic pace and you never really give yourself the opportunity to feel some of those rewards. And I think it's the fear of losing clients, not hitting your goals, not making enough money. But one thing I'm really working on this year, and then last year I did it a little better, is, you know, maybe taking some of that time and, you know, losing a customer or switching or maybe like you said, like hiring an extra guy to create a little margin so that I can enjoy some of those things. Because at the end of the day, if I resent my business, all the work that I've done to that point is useless. And so I'm really working on that now, because before we had kids, as we both have touched on, it's easy just to work all day. That's all you do. And then you get to the point where you start to feel like, holy cow, like my employees live a pretty good life. And I'm sitting here taking the brunt of everything. And so that's what I'm working on now, putting those pieces in place. But I want you to, we'll kind of go into this a little bit, but as a business owner, you talked about this, being isolated. Everything is on you. Touch on that a little bit, and how do you handle those moments? Because there's the moment at the bank where you feel everything's caving in on you, you feel isolated, you can't go to anybody. Touch on that a little bit, and then kind of how do you handle those? Where do you go? I mean, at this point, you have a team around you. But for example, say you have two crews. The guys don't know what you're going through. They don't know all the money that you just spent. They don't know that your bank account went down to zero to hit payroll. Touch on those moments if you don't mind.
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, when you have a small team or a big team, that for them to understand that what you do and why you do it, and that it's certainly, you know, you're at risk. You know, when everyone we buy something, I'm personally guaranteed. So if this doesn't work, they take, you know, in theory, they take my house.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to not necessarily add fear to your employees.
Yeah.
But make sure they understand that you're at risk as well. And the time that you put in, I don't think it's a thing where you have to tell them that you got there 2 hours earlier than them or worked 2 hours late.
Yeah.
Later than them. But I do think that they need to understand that, you know, you've got it all on the line as well. And I truly believe that, you know, especially in a small business, and maybe even today, you know, that you're in there and you're an example of what's going on. Just like I said earlier, my truck's running because it's freezing cold. But then if I go to the office and people are leaving their vehicles running, that's not a very good example. Like, you shut your vehicle off. Yeah. But as an owner, I'm going to let mine run all day.
Yeah.
So I think it's part of it is setting a good example for your people. Yeah. You know, and letting them understand, you know, again, the risk that we're all at and what the equipment costs and why. Yeah. I think this might not be answering your question exactly what we were, but, it is a lot of it is the why. To instead of telling people what to do, we need to talk to them about why we do what we do.
Yeah.
You know, if we maintain this vehicle better for these reasons, we're going to get 2 years of life out of it. We think that that's going to help our growth. We don't have to buy another vehicle.
Yeah.
That allows us to give raises, bonuses, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
And there's, again, you hit on something too. You don't want to resent your own business. And it's, I think at times you can, because you get so far into it that you start to feel like it's all on you. I mean, we can have those days where we're pouting, we're driving home from work. I've drove home from work almost in tears thinking, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And I've had those days where, like, it just feels like I can't, you know, I just kind of get hit with everything at once. You're like, holy smokes, man, what the hell did I put myself into here?
Yeah.
And those are the days I need to regroup. I don't know. I missed your comment. I was thinking about.
But you're there now. Like, how did you handle that? Like, that situation, you're going home, you're almost in tears, everything's on you. How did you handle that? And then, like, did you go to a certain person? Did you talk to your team about it? Did you change the business?
Yeah. I do think it's important for everybody at every size to have some people they trust. And I don't necessarily think it's a parent. Family and parents want the best for you, but sometimes they actually are the worst people to give advice. You'll hear that a lot. And Ed Mylett, he talks about that. It's not intentional.
Yeah.
But I do think it's important for people to get somebody in their life that they trust, an old teacher, a business guy, maybe a guy that's retired, somebody that they can buy coffee for once a month or every couple of weeks and just say, hey, man, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good breakfast clubs out there or entrepreneur groups that have lunch or breakfast.
Yeah.
Grab a beer, you know, and get it. I think we need a sounding board. I think we need someone to say, hey, dude, I'm just really struggling right now. And I've got all these problems. And sometimes it's amazing what you hear. I'm struggling with a few business things right now, where I spend my time and what does it look like. And so I had lunch with two different people. I had a phone call with somebody the end of last week. One of the guys I had lunch with on Friday was a high school friend, and I had more value out of that lunch. He just said, have you tried this? What do you think about that? And I left there just with so much relief that I had somebody to talk to other than my own business people, my own.
Yeah.
And it's nice to get. So I just encourage people to get somebody that they trust.
Yeah.
I think we are people as in general, we are just self-reliant. We want to think we have all the answers. Man, there's the best people in the world have mentors. It doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Just do somebody you trust.
Yeah.
And make sure that, again, make sure that person isn't financially involved in yeah. what's happening. And again, yeah. I think parents sometimes, they mean the best. Nobody wants harm, but I don't yeah. think that they have the exact right answers, or maybe yeah. they don't have the experience in that.
Yeah.
They can steer you one way, and that's, and be careful what you ask for too, because if you ask for advice, you don't have to take
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But if someone's giving you advice right now, you're wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And family's not always the best because they're scared for you. You know, your parents are always worried about you. And so everything is, yeah. oh, yeah, you know, be careful. And then to your point, I couldn't agree more that a mentor outside the green industry is huge. Because a lot of people that I talk to, and even when I network with people, they're stuck in the same issues as you. Like, yeah. no matter what scale you're at, you're always dealing with hiring, retaining, training people. And especially in the green industry, it seems like it's a lot easier to complain about employees and how hard it is to find good help, you know, especially April hits, everybody's complaining about the same thing. So finding a mentor that has been there and has done it and is probably outside our lawn care sector is probably the best option.
Yeah. And here's the reality. Every business is hard.
Oh yeah.
Don't get crazy. I mean, if you're in the fast food business, the restaurant business, I don't care if you sell. Every business is hard. Now, some are different, but they're all business tough.
Yeah.
Being a business owner is tough. That's why most people don't do it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of failure. It is tough work, and it takes a certain type of person to do that and do it well.
Yeah.
It's tough work, man, and it's and it doesn't. You know, it just doesn't. Very few are on autopilot, and if they are on autopilot, it takes a lot of years to get there, and you got to have really, really good systems in place. And so, yeah, getting somebody around you that you can trust, or a couple people that you can bounce ideas off of, I think is crucial. You know, even in this business, Jason Maltzwith, who's with me, and on the Ballard stuff, I know the products inside and out. He knows nothing about the products, but he still has a really good perspective on how it looks from a totally different, because I get too far in it sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, totally different, but I need advice from other people on business to say, hey, what about that or that? Because I got to remember that I'm not our end customer usually.
Yeah.
Even think of, you know, the lawn care businesses.
Yeah.
My people and my people in my company have said all the time, we're like, you're not our customer.
Yeah,
And so I have to think about that, because the way I buy or purchase is maybe not the way other people buy.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of get out of yourself a little bit and start this, what other people see in your business. And, you know, customer questionnaires and having, so we do an anonymous, you're able to fill out reports after, like right now it's snow season. And so every client's able to fill out a survey card, basically a report card on us anonymously.
Yeah.
Give people the option to say, you know, tell us how we're doing.
Yeah.
Those are some good things to do for your business. They can be a little humbling at times.
Yeah, yeah. I bet.
But you got to have a scorecard, right? I mean, you can't tell me, we're killing it. All our customers love us. Do they?
Yeah.
Are you sure they love you?
Oh, yeah.
Ask them. You know, they'll give you, most people will give you the feedback.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good point. I think to that, and then in any, you know, the sales side, customer service related, I always say winners keep score. How do you know if you're winning if you're not keeping score? And so that's a big quote for us. That's awesome. Well, let's end on this. We said we were going to get around to hiring, training, leading. If you want to talk about hiring, if you want to talk about the training process or leading people well where you're going, you take one of those three topics and run with it, and we'll wrap up.
Yeah, so I can tell you that 25 years later, technically 30, but 25 since we've been incorporated and really growing the business, we still don't have this figured out.
Yeah.
We have HR people, we have hiring strategies. We still, sorry, the internet connection, I'd say, okay, it's good. I think this is ever evolving. I think the type of people we're looking for, has changed. We're trying to build a place that if you work outdoors, here's my thought on it, and how do you get there? That's the challenge. But if you want to work outdoors, you want to plant, you want to mow, you want to work outdoors and with your hands, I want to be the place to work. I want Perfect Cut to be the place you want to work.
Yeah.
So when people say to me, there's nobody to hire, that's just not true.
Yeah.
There is. There's a ton of people. So let's just pretend that Des Moines has 1,000 people working in outside in lawn care. That's probably a low number, but 1,000 people. I just want the best 200, right?
Yeah.
I don't. There's 1,000 people doing lawn care. I just want the best 200.
Yeah.
If you want, you just want the best 5 or 10 or whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
So I think it starts with creating a place that people want to work.
Yeah.
Creating a place that when you put out a posting for a job, there's a lineup, like there's 4 people that applied.
Yep.
And all that comes together with, and not always pay. You know, pay typically ranks 3rd or 4th in reason people work places.
Yeah.
Now it might change a little bit in the labor pool, but it certainly starts with dollars there. But
yeah.
Create a place that's safe, quality uniforms, quality trucks, opportunity, clear communication. But we still struggle with this today. We have 100% turnover rate today still.
Yeah.
It's constant battle. We spend probably the most time talking about how do we recruit, how do we retain. I can see we're working on orientation right now. When they come in, and how do we give them an orientation that gives them, so when they walk out of that room, they go, man, that's a place I want to work. And so part of that is we're going to tell the company timeline. Let them understand that what this started like and all the trials and tribulations we went through and the failures we went through. And when they put their perfect cut shirt on, I want them to be like, wow, I work at a great place.
They're taking ownership in it.
They might not have full buy-in,
but
they don't just go, this company's big and they don't give a shit about me. We care about you. We care about your opportunity. We show them a growth pattern. We tell some stories about people that started in the field that maybe are managers now. We have a lot of really good success stories, internal success stories that
that's
I'd like
awesome.
To tell.
So
I think it starts with that. Some other things we're doing are 30, 60, 90 checkpoints. We found that we were losing a lot of people in the first 2 weeks. And why? So our goal, and now we haven't perfected this, our goal was you start on Monday. Before you get your first check on Friday, you have to meet with your manager, your supervisor, and he has to say, hey, Britt, how was your first week? You know, how'd it go? Any concerns? Feel like you got trained? You know, hey, I want to know, how were you treated? How were you treated in the parking lot? How are you treated on the crew? So what we found is some of our guys have been really hard on the new guys. They feel like this is some sort of hazing deal. It's not. And they said they treat the new guy. They want to see if he's tough enough to make it. Think about that. You're a 20-year-old kid. You jump on a crew with a couple, 30-year-old guys that have been around, and they start treating you like
that's intimidating. On your
you're like, I don't make enough to take this shit.
So
talk to them immediately. How was your first week? 30-day checkpoint. Hey, you're here 30 days. Are you comfortable? Is this what we told you it was going to be? And if it's not, let's figure out why. Which also leads me back to being brutally honest in the interviews as well. Like, don't sugarcoat the interview. This is what we do. This is how it works. It's hot, whatever. Like, don't come in and say, oh, man, it's 90 degrees. I told you that, right?
We used to do that. We used to sugarcoat the interviews. Main reason was, I mean, we were working out of my barn. And so it was kind of hard to convince people to see our vision when, they see chickens and a dog running around. Now that we're in the office, we've wasted a ton of time, bad hires because of that. So now we just point blank, hey, here's what it is. Here's your worst day. Here's your best day. Take it or leave it. So yeah, that's huge.
Honesty is important. I think, only if people say, well, I can't get any, if I'm telling the truth, I won't get them. Well, if you lie to them, you're only going to keep them for a week or two anyway. So just be brutally honest about what the work is. Maybe on the, I think you just make it almost scare them away. A little bit, and just say, this is what it's going to be. And the guy says, yeah, dude, I'm in. I can handle that. So I think points are important. Communicating with your guys, giving them an outlet. Who do they go to talk to when they have a problem? What if they're having a bad day? What if they're being treated poorly by their supervisor or on a truck? What if there's something unsafe and like, man, we're driving around and there's some, we're doing some unsafe stuff. So I think they need to know, who do they go to, and who do they go to safely? We have a piece on our app that basically it's kind of a whistleblower, where you can anonymously go on there and report anybody, or anything you see. Could be something as bad as, hey guys, smoked a joint in the truck. I hate to throw that out there, but we all know that stuff might happen. he doesn't want to lose his job. He don't want to get beat up or whatever it looks like. So he can anonymously go on there and say, hey, I was on crew 119. This is what's going on.
Yeah.
And then we do our investigation. So giving guys a safe outlet, who to talk to, where do I go?
Yeah.
Do I go to HR? Can I just fill out this quick form on their app? Everybody has an app on the phone.
Now that's really good. I feel like that might cut down on gossip a little bit too. You know, as we're growing, we haven't had this issue because we haven't had very many people, but we want to strive for no gossip. Like if you're talking to somebody that cannot make a decision or change what's going on, that we want to nix that. You know, we don't want that at all. You need to be taking it up to somebody who can actually change and fix the problem. And I think that's a really good idea. I actually haven't heard of anybody doing that, so that's pretty cool.
Good luck with that, no gossip.
Yeah, I know. We'll keep it to a minimum. Yeah.
It's challenging too. You know, one of the things that we are challenged with too is pay. You know, everybody knows what everybody makes, and it blows my mind. And so you have to be very cautious. So we have a very strict pay structure now that's getting better and better.
Yeah.
And based on some criteria. We also have set time for reviews. Every June there's reviews. Everybody gets a review. They also do a self-assessment, which I like. They assess themselves. We assess them with their direct manager. So that way we cut down on, hey, I'm coming back. I need a dollar an hour raise. Well, you'll have a review June because people are getting raises at all different times. So
that's what I was going to ask. How do you give your raises? Do you, if they're doing good, do you give them a raise every year? How does that look?
It's happened a lot of different ways over the years. We're trying to refine this to where they have their June and then their September. So you got a winter review and a summer review. It has to be based on added skill set. It's not based on tenure. And that's where people get like, well, I've been here a year longer. I don't owe you another dollar an hour because you've been here a year longer.
Your raise is effective when you are, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so tell me what you've done in the off season.
Yeah.
Oh, you got your applicator's license? Awesome. You got a CDL? Sweet.
Yeah.
You don't even need the CDL, but I appreciate the effort. Now we know that you can drive a bigger truck or whatever it looks like. So we're trying to build a path to raises. And what does that look like? Because what we've done in the past, and I think you've done and a lot of guys have done, is we give raises to whoever yells the loudest.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave if you don't give me X.
Yeah.
Shoot, we can't lose him. So now we give him a dollar.
Yeah.
He makes 19, but this guy makes 17. The guy makes 17's better. Now he finds out that he's making 19. He quit. Guess what? He's gone. I'm the best guy.
Yeah.
This guy's making bucks an hour more than he's worth. Yeah. And he's got a... And so we've really, really been working hard on consistency. Now you can get a raise outside of those review periods if you get a promotion. So mowing, if you're a second guy, you're a second and you become a foreman.
Okay.
You stepped up, that is X, you know, it's $1, $2, whatever it looks like.
So you go from one position to the next, you know, it's more responsibility, more pay. What about-
And we have two guys to stair steps too. It's like, I want to be a foreman. Okay, well, you need to be authorized driver. You need to have this amount of experience. And then are you trained? And so we have some stair steps in there that allows them to...
So they know where they're going, like how they get there at least. What about leadership roles? So because that makes sense, the stair stepping. But what about people that are either managing people more in a leadership role? Sales is pretty easy because obviously you got to sell something to make something. But the guys that are managing people or myself, you know, we have guys that are starting to manage 3 or 4 technicians and, you know, hiring a turf route manager who's going to be hiring somebody next year. That leadership position is a little difficult for us. Speak to that a little bit.
So we built just this year, again, some incentive programs by department.
Okay.
So we looked at 2017. We're going back in and said, okay, this department did X.
Okay.
If you can get it to Y, it's worth this. And so we try to share an incentive program with the leaders.
Okay.
You know, it's just best to align their interests with ours.
And so is it different every year? We're at X now, you get to Y,
so
you
like
get this?
This year we would review how we performed in 2018 and say, okay, you know, we use some top line stuff. We kind of
Hey, lawn care leaders, thanks for listening. Wanted to hop in here, let you know that Jobber has launched a new product for $19 a month. giving folks the opportunity at any stage in their business to access software. They understand that entrepreneurs sometimes don't have big crews, and they want to help the folks out by just getting them started. If you're looking to offer a hassle-free customer experience and professional-looking quotes and invoices, then you need and you must check out Jobber. I'm telling you what, from day one, when I was just one guy in a push mower, we hopped on Jobber, changed the game for us. So head on over to getjobber.com/Britt-Dowd. That's BRITT-DOWD. And again, that's getjobber.com. Here we go, back to the show.
Why? So I think, again, you have to align your interests with theirs. They have to have some skin in the game. Mm-hmm. For years, we just did subjective bonuses, and I can tell you that doesn't work. Be like, oh, that Jim did really good. Let's give him $3,000.
Yeah.
And it's like, but based on what?
Yeah.
What is doing really good? Did he just do his job? Did he perform better than expected? Did he preserve his equipment? Did he stay under budget? Mm-hmm. Did we have less complaints than usual? Was our equipment very well maintained? So for years and years, we had these subjective bonuses. The sooner you can get out of those, the better your life will be. Very data driven. I'm not good at that. We have some people in our office that are great at that.
That's good. So let me ask you this. Do you run each department on their own P&L? And then
yes.
They
all come together. So each department has a separate revenue, costs, their direct costs.
Okay.
And admin allocation. So
whoever's over that department will get, bonus or however you guys do it off of whatever their bottom line is.
Exactly. So they control only the things they control. So
quarterly, annually.
Manager. He might have irrigation service manager. He's got 6 irrigation techs below him. That's his deal. It's his department. He controls overtime. He controls, and if he can perform. We have a baseline. We got to do X. That's our baseline.
Yeah.
And everything above that, we're going to share with you pretty aggressively. Because we want it to make worthwhile. If he kicks ass, you don't say, hey, here's your $1,000 bonus. It's, hey, it has to feel significant.
Yeah. So you have like a benchmark that they have to hit.
Yeah.
That's he's getting paid. He's getting base salary, hourly, whatever, to hit that. Anything above that threshold, he's going to get.
Yeah, we share him.
Okay.
We do it, he gets some perfect. It's a win-win for everybody.
And is that quarterly? How often is that paid? Quarterly, monthly?
It's paid annually.
Annually, okay.
And we struggle with that because what's happened is there's been quarters that are really good. Oh, man, and then irrigation's a good example. Then all of a sudden we have a ton of rain and maybe they have 2 bad months.
Yeah.
Okay, well, take your bonus back.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's some challenges there as well. I think in the labor pool, you have to do them a lot. It has to feel a lot more immediate gratification, like weekly or monthly.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you're performing better than, and because they got to feel that. Whereas a manager understands, I paid a salary to do my job. At the end of the year, if I perform well, I have, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever number that is significant enough to make them really grind. Because at the end of the day, you want to give that bonus. Based on the numbers that we run, I want his bonus to be $10,000, whatever number it is. Because we know that he made a significant improvement and everybody wins. You could write that check every day of the week if based on the performance increase.
And so have you found that they don't realize that? So say they're getting paid $30,000, they get a $10,000 bonus, and they end up taking a job somewhere else because they were like, well, I was only getting paid $30,000 a year. And you're like, well, we gave you a $10,000 bonus. Have you run into that and thought about doing incremental or quarterly and speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, good point. We have run into that. We've had people come in and say, now I don't know where you're getting these people for 30, but we're paying a little.
No, we're not. I just wanted to throw out easy numbers.
Yeah, but I get that sometimes where people say, hey, I'm taking a job over here. It pays more. And we're like, well, let's back up. Like, you make X base. We have a snow incentive program that you make for snow. So you snow bonus $4,000 in snow bonus. You have an incentive program in your other department. You have a company vehicle that we have a value of on X.
Yeah.
You have 401k, you have healthcare. You have covered uniforms, covered cell phone. Like, you didn't make 50. You made 71.
Yeah.
And so, to your point, though, sometimes you have to bring it out and go,
yeah.
Because it's easy to just say, my salary's 50,000. It's just used, you know.
Yeah.
But that is your base, but then you have all these other intangibles, intangible things that, remember, you drive a company truck to and from, like that, you don't have another vehicle, so you have a company vehicle and wear and tear and fuel and insurance.
Yep.
So we have a value that we put on that. We know that that's worth, you know, between $8,000 and $10,000 a year. And, you know, again, and the cell phone that you get to use for personal use and all these other things that go on. But that does happen. And so sometimes we have to walk people through their package. And I think it's important when you do annual reviews with your managers as well, you look at their entire year and say, hey, Joe, here's your baseline. Here's what you achieved in bonuses. Here's some of the perks. You know, if you have a 401k or healthcare, hey, we co-pay on your healthcare, $200 a month. So you are out of pocket is $2,400 a year. So let's add that back in. And, you know, and you got 3 weeks vacation. Let's not forget about that. And, and so I think it is important. People, you know, they're going to see it the way they see it. We've had people say, you know, we'd had a guy leave recently and said, I didn't get paid for snow. Well, that's just not the truth. Your salary is to do snow. So you did get your snow. And you got any time that's off hours, you did get a bonus. But, you know, perception is reality in some people's mind. And I didn't get paid for snow. It hit me kind of hard. But, of course, you did. That's why you get your salary all winter long.
That was your job, Yeah, that's really, really good. And I'm dropping the ball with that because I almost get nervous when I'm doing an interview and they ask, hey, do you have benefits? Because we're so small that we don't offer health or dental or 401k. And bringing up the truck and the value of that is huge because they do have a company truck. And I don't, I bring that up, but I don't touch on the numbers at all. And I'm gonna start doing that.
Show them the value of that, because some people won't. Let's say that they're married, and we have a lot of people that's they're a two vehicle family, and one of those vehicles is one of ours. So they now have one less vehicle in their family, one less payment, one less tires, wear and tear, oil changes, fuel, and that makes a big difference and impact in their family. Where they, and I've had people say, I don't even care about it. I'll take, you know, the vehicle's not important to me. I'm like, okay, but here's the thing: we're not going to pay. We don't pay you more. Like, if the vehicle's worth $8,000, I don't want the vehicle. Can you pay me $8,000? No.
Yeah. How are you going to get to your job? it's just a part of it. So is $8,000 to $10,000? Is that what you valued it at? I mean, that's kind of your number.
We valued it between $8,000 and $10,000. It depends on where they live, how many miles they drive. But we value it that. Yeah, we do, and we always have. And, I think showing people that there's a tremendous value there. Also, you're a part of the team, man. You park that vehicle, that green vehicle, whatever color your trucks are. And you're part of the team. We trust you. You're an ambassador for our brand. But you get it, you know, you don't get to take our vehicle to the bar, but you do get to take our vehicle to the grocery store and the kids' soccer game if you need to. And, you know, we give you some flexibility. You don't get to take it out of town. You're not taking it to Florida for the weekend. But we have a pretty flexible vehicle program because we realize that guy, that's his vehicle, right?
And then so, it's just more branding for you, as you
and
mentioned.
And with that comes some responsibility, too. And we talk about where they can be and where they can't be, because for years you'd see a bright blue Perfect truck sitting at a bar on a Sunday or Saturday. And we had to talk about that. Can't have a blue truck sitting in front of a bar not after 9 p.m. You know, we have like a, you know, and we've gotten much, much better as we've grown over the years in the type of people we've hired. But use that. I mean, I think you have to show them value in that. If you don't have 401k and health care right now, that's okay. I think then you talk about paying your guys maybe at the top line. Like, hey, guys, we don't have that. But we have these incentive programs. And we pay based on performance. And so while everybody else is paying you, whatever, 15, we're going to pay you 16. But you can earn up to 20 based on these performance, you know, some keys right here. If you can perform, extra. And, you know, I've got a friend that owns a big roofing company, and he just pays his people the most. He expects the most, but he just pays them the most. They can't leave. I mean, they just don't want him. Their paychecks are big enough that he puts a number on it that brings value to his company.
That's awesome. Well, Corey, we'll wrap up here. As always, I appreciate your time. I feel like that was a lot to chew on, so I don't know how we'll break. We might break this podcast up a little bit, or just blast it all out there and let people, you know, t- take notes and whatnot, but tell everybody where they can find you and where they can connect with you.
You know, one of the things that we do, and I don't think we talked about it today, is for 19 years now, we are in the lawn care and landscape accessory business. So, and with that, we manufacture, design, and we also sell a lot of other people's products. I've been getting a hard time sometimes on social media where people say, you just sell other people's products. And I'm kind of a smart ass, so I just remind them that, you know, Amazon doesn't make all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And Target, they don't make that stuff. Grocery store, there's not like a Dorito guy out back putting Doritos in the bag.
Exactly.
So we do sell a lot of other people's products, and that's only because they make it better than what we can. There's some great products that we sell.
Yeah.
So Ballard-Inc.com, we're on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. So we have some awesome products that we sell to help everyday landscapers, all the way from just mower accessories, trailer accessories, gear. We got shoes. We got, you know, sound protecting headphones. We've got like 85 products now that we sell. And I'm super passionate about that. I love that we can bring great products. And the truth is, the stuff we sell, we use. So I'm not BSing people. I have a lot of other products coming at us that we could sell. And we just don't do that company. But so Ballard-Inc.com is where you can find some awesome products.
Okay.
You know, I think, you know, if it's up to you, I'd like to get, you know, we can keep doing these. I enjoy them.
Yeah.
Maybe get some feedback and say, hey, I think, you know, one of the things we didn't hit on today is kind of, when do you know when to add that second crew or third crew? When do you know when to hire that admin person? When do you know when to hire your first salesperson? Or maybe it's an operation guy if you're the best sales guy. So I think we could talk about some of those things. I mean, there's a million things we could talk about. You can get some feedback from your followers. We'll get some feedback from ours.
And if you're listening into this, we'd love for you guys to comment on his Instagram post or mine and leave some feedback on pain points, what you're experiencing, and just literally tell us about your company and where you're at, because that helps us add value to you guys.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys are struggling. We talked to a lot of guys, and so, you know, a lot of guys are just saying there's no help out there, and I don't believe that. There's help out. You know, there's a lot of good people out there if you know how to find them, and if you put your company in a place that it's gonna get those people. So we appreciate being on. Let me know. You and I can talk off camera, I guess, and figure out what we can do next. And you know, as long as we think it's adding value and people are interested in listening to me ramble on about what we're doing.
It's awesome, man. I know people are enjoying it. I know I do. We appreciate your time, and hope you guys have a good week. Stay warm out there. It's gonna get, how low is it gonna get?
Minus 15 tomorrow or something. I mean, real temps. they're gonna cancel some schools. College has been canceled. I think it's, you know, they just don't want people, you know, people on the road.
Yeah.
If your car breaks down, man, you're not walking two miles. You're done.
Yeah, you gotta figure stuff out.
Coldest temps in 20 years.
Yeah,
which I was telling my boys, like, this will be the coldest of your life.
Yeah,
oh,
crazy.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Yeah, hunker down, stay warm, and I really enjoyed this. Hope you guys are enjoying it, and we'll get back together soon, and definitely we'll get feedback, and we'll kind of gauge our next topics off of that.
Awesome, I appreciate it. Have a good day.
All right, thanks, Corey. We'll see you, Jason. Thanks. Have a good week.
Thank you.